Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, is in that other box, and he's bringing that awesome sauce. He is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
I'm good. I've taken to doodling during these podcasts, drawing little squares and circles and, you know, just... It's nice.
Is that the extent of your doodling?
It helps the mind flow. Yeah, the occasional triangle.
Now, at the top right of your page, are you drawing a house with a path going through some hills and some trees?
Yes, there's some mountains. There's a little smoke cloud.
That's got to be a window into the human condition. Right. Anyway, joining us this week are Josh and Nate Pierce, the founders of Long Neck Games and developers of Res Please, a puzzle platformer that puts a new twist on co-op and single-player gameplay. Josh, Nate, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, happy to be here.
Absolutely.
Now, do you guys say it Res Please or Res Please?
Yeah, I think that's what
I hear it in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when we say it, like, yeah, it's got some sassiness to it. Yeah, but I definitely, when other people say it, I hear it a lot more with like a question mark or like an exclamation point.
Right, there's a little inflection at the end.
Sometimes some passive aggression.
Lean back a little bit.
As a player of like Battle Royale games and stuff like that, for me, it's probably more like, Rez, please, oh my God, what are you doing?
Like,
Rez,
yes.
Why?
Yeah. Well, yeah, for Overwatching, it's like you're yelling for a Rez.
I just started playing a little bit of Hyperscape. I don't know if you guys have checked that out yet.
I did check it out.
But like that is like the most Res Pleasiest battle royale thing, because you literally are ghosts running around after people, like, come on, bro, just hook a brother up.
He's chasing them in game chat, just yelling at them the whole time. For those of you that are new to the Dual Screens podcast, this is an interview show where we bring on industry guests to tell us their story, be it a programmer, an artist, a voice actor. Everybody has a story to tell, and we want to be their platform to do so. And this show posts each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home Podbean. And of course, you could watch and listen, whatever. You can minimize it. I don't know how you consume your YouTube videos, but you could do that on youtube.com/dualscreensTV. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. It would help the show get way more eyes in front of it. The more reviews, the more eyes. It's just how the algorithm works. We are beholden to the overlords of algorithms. So if you would help us out, that would be absolutely incredible. Now, Josh, Nate, you've created a video game that encourages murdering or yourself or your friend in order to solve puzzles. Excellent little twist on things, but I want to just catch up with you guys and with the game since PAX East, because that was when Andy and I had seen it. We put it on our little list. We could say, we got to get these guys on the show. We want to hear their story. So how have things been going since the world has gone to shit?
Yeah, that's a great question. Things have been going good. I mean, you know, it's funny for us, like, so we quit our day jobs 2 years ago now, right? Almost 2 years ago. Yeah, to work on Res Please full time. And so weirdly, like when coronavirus and stuff hit, we were like, oh, so the fact, like, we're already not going anywhere. So we just go nowhere less. Like, okay. We were like pretty already acclimated to it. But we definitely did get to a point where we like kind of were like trying to be like super socially distant. So like I didn't even go over to Nate's house anymore. Like we work out of his extra room as an office usually. We're at my house tonight or today. But I'd go over to his place, and we had a pretty good little rotation. We'd go to the dog park, have this whole routine, you know? And then when like it really got serious, we were like, oh, like we probably need to just like, everybody just takes a step back. Right. And so, it was a weird adjustment, but in a lot of ways it wasn't much of an adjustment. You know, when you're like, you know, we get a tan from our monitors most of the time. So like, we don't care too much generally. But definitely as far as like wrapping up a game and like getting it, you know, ready to be put out and stuff. Coronavirus still affected us for sure. Like almost all the platforms and stuff, all their processes got a lot longer turnaround times. Everything kind of slowed down a little bit, which kind of set us back here and there. But yeah, you know, for better or worse, it is what it is, right? New normal and all that jazz.
Yeah, we just cook at home a lot more.
Yeah.
Did it
not so much for sure.
Did it affect any of your plans for, like, you know, obviously attending other events or like, I imagine you had like this kind of roadmap of how you were going to get this into people's hands and, you know, get it in front of more and more people. What ways have you adjusted to kind of get the word out on Res Please?
Yeah. So, it was kind of, as far as like when we set up our publishing agreement with Graffiti Games, they kind of had a roadmap set up around kind of up until PAX East. And then GDC was the first one that was like kind of a hit to us where we were like, oh gosh, we're going to be able to do anything with GDC. And so they had to like make some adjustments around that. And then we were like really planning on maybe doing a PAX West thing as like our final like Res Please presence. But obviously that's not going to be a thing. So we really just, you know, had to rely on just word of mouth and like doing social media stuff and doing some ad spends and things like that to get the name out there, which at the end of the day, like, is kind of how it works now. Like, expos are great. And we love interacting with people. Like, we really like being on the ground floor and like seeing people, you know, interact with the game and respond to it. And it's really important for us to get that feedback. But ultimately, as far as like the impact it has on like actually getting the name out there, it can kind of feel like it's not necessarily the whole reason for going. Like, I don't think as an indie dev, it's always like the most profitable investment of like marketing to go in and think you're going to reach like a huge audience just on the expo floor.
Right.
Yeah. So like for us, I guess, you know, we kind of looked at it that way and said, you know, it could be worse. Like, I don't know, like you just kind of roll the punches, you know, and make adjustments where you need to. So, you know, it ended up being more Facebook ads and things like that.
Yeah. One thing that was a shame is we didn't get to do a launch party. We were really looking at it.
A bummer.
We talked to some of the local barcades in the area and they were really excited to host it for us, but yeah, we just couldn't do it. So,
yeah, that sucks. That's kind of like the story we've been hearing across the country and really the world. We've interviewed people from all over the world at this point since PAX East. And, I feel terrible for you guys, but at the same time, like if the numbers really don't move one way or the other, you know, for conventions, I guess that's interesting to hear. Cause you would think as, you know, a smaller indie team that like, those are the opportunity to really see people playing your game and like, you know, really get constructive feedback, but you guys were kind of on the home stretch anyway. So you probably passed that, stage as it were. Do you think that with the way that these conventions or lack thereof are kind of evolving in spite of as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, do you think it's going to change things going forward? Do you think it's going to be more of a digital presence? Do you think there's going to be more of a space for developers of your size going forward?
Yeah, I do. I think that there are some groups coming up around the idea of being more curated. And even like, if you look at like the Steam event that they had, their indie event, like it was almost too saturated. Like there was a pretty high, quantity to it, which is kind of Steam's like, you know, that's par for the course with Steam is it's all quantity. Right. But, it felt like some folks got lost in the shuffle in that. And I think that there's definitely a conversation around kind of making it a little more, either curated or focused in a way that's, you know, kind of appreciating like niches or genres or, you know, audiences that are very specific. I think there's a lot of opportunity in that, especially for indies, just because like, you know, nobody in the indie space is going to compete with Battlefield or something, you know, like they have their own thing. They throw their millions of dollars at it. And like, they have those channels already established. Like, I think indie has a space to like really start building its own channels, especially digitally, because there's no overhead to it, right? Yeah. So like, you know, it's even with like the like packs and stuff, like those booths aren't cheap for like struggling indie, you know, or you know, somebody trying to do, you know, get their first thing off the ground. So I definitely think that there's a lot of opportunity going forward to kind of restructure that, and you're seeing it even with like E3, you know, basically like they were kind of looking at canceling even before all this was happening, because the support is just shifted so much around how that expo plays out. And I think you see it even with GDC a little bit. I mean, that's very heavily like industry side,
right?
But ultimately it's incredibly cost prohibitive for most people. And it's, you know, it's a lot of these things that you could probably figure out another way to do without everybody just, you know, landing in San Francisco and dumping, you know, $15,000 into a weekend or whatever, right. You know.
Well, what's the purpose for it from, I'm sorry, Andy, I just want to know what the purpose is from an indie perspective, from a, especially a small team. What is the purpose of a GDC, or, you know, is it just to get people writing about the game? Is it, to, you know, and is it worth the return of investment in historically?
Yeah, I mean, I can only speak to it from our experience, and we're not like the most industry tied in because this is our first game.
Sure.
And we literally came from nothing. Like, this is a garage studio, you know. But, you know, our experience was, I think, you know, looking back, for us, we went into the first handful of expos as generally just like, kind of like our audience feedback, you know, thing. Like if we got interviews, that was cool, but we were a long ways off from wrapping the game. And it's really hard to keep that hype going 2-3 years later, you know. If anything, we probably went to expos a little too early because we had a really strong vertical slice that we were demoing, but like there was a lot more game to still make. But I think, you know, like everybody has, I think everybody's mileage may vary on how they go into the expo circuit. But for us, like, interviews are nice. I think that's like the best kind of exposure you can get at a larger scale. You know, having the direct audience feedback is nice, but it's always kind of tinted by the fact that you're on a showroom floor and you're trying to keep it concise and keep people moving. And some games don't show well, like, you know, RTSs are like notoriously hard to demo because it takes you 45 minutes just to figure out what the hell is going on, right? With a lot of like RTSs and games like that. So like, depending on the game, you know, and your curb appeal and stuff, you may or may not have a great audience experience at an expo, you know, where somebody might need a little more intimate experience where they can sit down and really be one-on-one with it and in a separate environment where time's not an issue. So I think it really just depends on what you're going for. But I'd say the biggest part, like the most satisfying part for us, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nate, but I'd say it's probably the networking, just meeting other devs, you know, meeting other people that are in the industry, because we all spend so much time in a vacuum, just getting out there and being like, yeah, this is fucking hard, right? Like having that interaction is really nice and helpful. And it kind of makes you feel like you're not going crazy, you know, because it definitely can be kind of crazy making sometimes.
Is profanity okay?
Yeah, also, I'm sorry.
No, dude, yeah, totally.
Let it fly. Oh, okay,
cool. We encourage it.
You said you didn't edit things. I'm like, well, I hope they don't have to go back and deal with that.
No. We are the explicit.
About expos is there certain games that will show really well at an expo, but it's kind of a false sense of security. Like local multiplayer only games will show super well at expos because you have all these people together playing it, but they notoriously don't sell super well in the marketplace because local multiplayer only it's kind of a rare breed these days.
Yeah.
So like you do an expo and you'd be like, our game's so popular, everyone loves it. And then you launch and you sell like 50 copies.
Yeah.
So it just depends on what you're going for.
Yeah. I think Steve, you were saying how the best part of PAX East this year was how a lot of the bigger names were dropping out before the show even was a go.
Yeah.
It allowed a lot of the smaller devs to really shine and breathe on that show floor, which was nice. Like you had a whole massive space and you had everyone's attention for essentially 4 days.
Yeah. That's what I like PAX South a lot too, is PAX South has a much smaller AAA presence.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely feel the difference too. Like just the audience is different, you know. I never really understood the idea of going to like PAX and like waiting in line for a game that already came out or is coming out, like, or a patch that's coming out for a thing that's, you know, you're going to play as soon as you get home or whatever. I always liked the discovery part of it. So that's always been the like fun part for me, is like finding all those new studios and games coming out.
Yeah.
So
go ahead, Andy.
And I just wanted to ask them as a good launching point to a much broader conversation. Why would you choose such a crazy career like game development?
Right.
It's your first game. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
So what drove that decision? Like, why did you both jump into this path?
Yeah, I think it's going to sound a little like cliche, but like it's definitely like our childhood dream to get into video games. I like to make the joke. So like for a long time, I was a freelance artist and I worked in the stop motion industry. And I was like, you know what? I want to make less money than when I did stop motion. I'll get into pixel art. But, you know, it's always been our passion. And we've always just loved games. You know, we're Oregon kids, rainy day kids. We stayed inside a lot and played video games growing up. You know, we grew up around the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis and all that. And, you know, it was always like something that we like as kids were like super interested in, like the concept of making our own game. And then, you know, you kind of grow up and life gets in the way and you get a real job and we both kind of like, you know, just we're paying rent and stuff. And then Nate was like kind of looking at shifting careers because he was waiting tables at Applebee's and bartending for a long time.
I did that shit too. Sorry to hear it.
Yeah.
that'll, I mean, it adds character, but man.
Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah.
Puppy. Yeah.
We let them out, or maybe just open the door for them.
Yeah.
So, looking at that, it was just like Nate kind of was like, oh, I'll start getting into programming, learning it on the side and kind of teaching himself. And he was doing like, these applications, he was trying to make like these scheduling apps and stuff. And he's like, this is boring. You know what else I could make with programming is a video game. And yeah, I'll let you pick it up from there.
Yeah, so my wife was a wedding coordinator at the time. And so I made her this whole program for organizing her wedding coordinating. And then by the time I got done, I was like, do I really want to go to wedding expos and pitch a wedding program? I was like, I'm not passionate about this at all. Like, it's cool that it does these things, but like, I should really be working on something I love. And with game development, you get to shape your own world. And so like you get to set all the different rules and like create life essentially. Like, especially for me being the programmer doing enemy AI, you have like sprites and you have like meshes or whatever. And then you add the logic to it. And now it's like this living, breathing thing that you created. And there's just something so satisfying about that, that it becomes kind of addicting. And so once you stop, you're just like, well, now this is what I do now. Like, I can't stop doing it. Yeah. So
you got a bit of a God complex is what happened. That's what that fueled your game development.
Also because it is like a thing that comes from passion, it kind of makes it the best worst job ever, right? You know, like it's so unhealthy sometimes, like the relationship you have with like a personal project or a passion project, because you really are trying to balance out like the rest of your life against this thing that you really want to pursue. You know, we're incredibly fortunate to have partners that both really support us and like are encouraging to this, but like, it's a lot. Like, you know, they say you never work as hard as when you work for yourself. And I don't think that's ever truer than in game development, you know?
Cause it sounds, you know, on paper, like a great career path. Like you get to make your own little world. It's your own ideas that you design from the ground up, and we get to enjoy it as gamers. But actually executing on that, what was that like? Like learning all the systems to actually make a game?
Overwhelming.
It's a lot, you know, and we were really like intentional going into it. We were like, okay, we're going to keep our scope small. You know, we have a really straightforward, like we have a concept that we know we can execute on. We did a lot of like, I call it killing your darling, where you like have all these big ideas and you just chop them off and you just keep chopping them off till you have something that's narrow and you can just really, you know you can get to the finish line of it. And even then it was so much, like it was just so much to do. And you just realize like, also like we were learning the whole time. So we taught ourselves from scratch, you know, my first sprites, you know, were towards Res Please. And so, you know, we got 6 months in and it's like, oh, I know how to do pixel art so much better now. I'm going to redo everything.
Mm-hmm. And, wow, you know, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So you just do that kind of stuff all along the way. And it's a very iterative process, but also like, you're just, you know, especially when you're like learning, you know, for our first game, you know, I think more than anything, and it's always a process. You're always going to learn more, but like, definitely there was a lot of like, just like, oh, we need to go back and like completely rework this, having this new logic or this new understanding. And so it kind of becomes like a two steps forward, one step back process sometimes, which is also really hard. I think somebody asked me once and I described it as game development is trying to fill a well with pebbles and never hearing them hit the bottom. Like that's what it feels like a lot of the time.
That is deeply profound and also terrifying.
Yeah, there's nothing more stressful than trying to meet deadlines when you're trying to do something that you don't know how to do.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Tell me about it.
So how did things shift for you guys once a publisher was tossed in the mix?
Yeah, I think it helped kind of hold a little bit of a fire underneath us. I mean, we were already like putting in pretty heavy hours, but like once we had some real like tangible deadlines and there was a little more accountability outside of just us kind of moving our own goalpost, it definitely lit a fire under us. But also made us like really have to make some tough decisions around like what it was going to take to get our to get the game finished and like what things we were going to be able to implement or what, you know, kind of dreams we had to like let go on the back burner or maybe save for like a DLC and stuff. But it definitely helped kind of having somebody else to do some sanity checks too, because once again, like, you know, we're going into this kind of blind. And so having somebody be like, yeah, no, this is good. Or, you know, here's the things we need to consider going forward instead of just like, you know, walking around in the dark and stumbling into some of this stuff, you know, especially when it came to like, they helped a lot with our console ports, just helping us get through the submission process and navigate the systems. Cause all those systems are pretty, they're pretty like, they're not super intuitive to go through. And there's a lot of little hoops you got to jump through. And so just having somebody that can kind of help keep you on the right path with that was super helpful. And definitely like that was one of the benefits to having a publisher for sure, was helping us get the ports rolled out easily.
Yeah, just having them having gone through the process of fully releasing a game before, like having that experience behind us to be like, oh, okay, well, we don't know what we're doing, but they do.
Yeah.
Right. So if we get stuck, we have someone we can turn to finally.
Yeah.
So that definitely helped a lot.
When a publisher comes on board, at least obviously you can only speak to your experience, do they say, hey, this is when we think that we want this to come out. Like, can you hit it? Or is it more of a, here's the date, hit it? Or is it a, what date did you think? Okay, now here's what we were thinking. Like, how do they figure out when your game is going to come out?
Yeah, so with Graffiti, it was definitely a back and forth conversation. We talked to a couple other publishers, and I think they kind of come in all those different varieties of like kind of their thing. Like, we definitely talked to a publisher early on that like was gonna like do a pretty sizable chunk of money, but they wanted the game done in 8 months, and they were just like very like, you know, set on that. And it was like, we don't really feel comfortable with that, and there wasn't a lot of wiggle room around it. Right. So, you know, that wasn't a good deal for us, and so we didn't end up going with it. But like with Graffiti, it was more of like a conversation around like, okay, where do you guys think you can get this done? And they're looking at their roster too, because they've got other games they're trying to release, and they're trying to kind of put them on a schedule and timeline. So it was much more of a communication around like, you know, here's where we're at, here's where we need to be, you know, and can you guys hit this? Can, you know, do we need to move this here or whatever? And there was some of that, especially with all the coronavirus stuff. You know, I think when we originally talked to them, we were talking about releasing the game in February. So, you know, stuff happens for yeah, sure. Yeah. I think it's really helpful to have a relationship with a publisher that allows you to like feel comfortable with having that communication. Cause the other options are really like, do we just lie? And then, you know, when we get to that point where we have to have a deliverable, we just go, sorry, we don't have it, because they're not going to be comfortable with it in any other way. Mm-hmm. You know, like I could see a lot of publishing deals going down that way, because there is kind of that like impetus, especially with like full backing, that you're like, I have to deliver this, and they don't want to hear my excuses or whatever. But like sometimes just, you know, there's a lot of stuff in this process that is totally unforeseeable, and like that could really paint you into a corner. And you know, without that communication, I could see somebody being in a really tough place with it.
How does the sibling dynamic factor in to making a game? Because my brother and I, we've sat down to try to do like some sort of creative work numerous times, and it's always frustrating, because it's like Frasier and Niles in a sense, our dynamic. Mm-hmm. It's, we each know better than the other one does, and things always end up highly volatile in a room.
Yeah.
So how does that work for you guys? Yeah. Like who is the slacker? Who's the taskmaster? How does that work?
Yeah. Like they said, it's definitely got its pros and cons. I think for us, like we're like just really, really close. So we have kind of a hive mind about most things anyways. And then I think one of our strengths is we do a really good job of picking up where the other one leaves off. So, you know, like Nate has his things and I have my things, and they complement each other really well. But because there's not a lot of overlap, we don't have as many conflicts as maybe some people would around, you know, both insisting that you have the best idea around something. Not to say we didn't butt our heads, because we definitely did.
Yeah.
just, you know, and also that just comes from, once again, the byproduct of just working on something that you're both passionate about. You know, you both want to make it the best thing possible. And, you know, our visions in our heads do have slight differences, you know, in what we want the total outcome to be. So compromise was definitely like a learning process for us, I'd say. But overall, it was very positive. To your other question, though, like Nate is definitely the tenacious one. Like he is, I've always described him as an absolute bulldog. And I will be totally honest, there is no way this game would have gotten done if it was on my shoulders. 100%. Nate is the type of person, he's the reason I worked on the game, is because I knew that if he set out to do it, he'd finish it no matter what. And he's the only person in the world that I can say that about with 100% certainty. And when you can say that, it makes you feel very comfortable to work on something that took 5 years of your whole existence, you know?
Yeah, we always joke about when we butt heads, there's obviously the sibling rivalry that comes into it, where you're like, maybe your arguments shouldn't be as heated as they are, but there's like that sibling dynamic that comes into play.
Right. But then it's more than just what you're talking about.
It's a comfortability. Oh, yeah.
It's years of repressed anger.
Yeah, it's all childhood of wedgies and noogies and stuff coming up.
This is just like third grade.
Yeah.
But then you stole my pudding pop.
We always joke about how, like, when things get really like stressful or whatever with work or whatever, we have this brotherly bond, and so it's like nobody's gonna walk away. It's not like you're gonna like screw this, I'm out, I quit the project. Yeah. Like we always joke, we have to love each other at the end of the day. So
yeah,
just quit the family.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm moving to Alaska. To hell with you people.
You can keep mom.
But actually, you know what? You guys cheated, though, because you have a therapeutic way of getting a lot of this anger out, in which you have cleverly created a game where you play as two characters just consistently trying to kill and then resurrect each other. So let's get into the design philosophy of Res, please. Where did this come from? Whose brilliant and sick and twisted brain did this come from?
Yeah, so... it came, I mean, Nate had the original idea for it. He had this idea around, you know, what if you were able to use one of the brothers as like a platform? And I was like, that's got legs to it, because A, I love violence. It's like weird, awkward, cute violence and things. Mm-hmm. So like something about how silly the whole concept was, like, was something I immediately identified with. And I'm like, I can tell this story. Like I can get behind this concept. So yeah, Nate was definitely he had the original inspiration for it, but I think overall it's really like a byproduct of our childhood. Like it's like a delayed like effect of growing up around a video game with brothers and renting a game at a Blockbuster, and you come home with it and you're like, okay, when you die, you hand the controller to me. You know, it's like our weird 20 some odd years later solution to that problem of like, what if you died, that was part of the game, so you played it at the same time, and it was like, you know Mario and Luigi not just like jumping off the same mushrooms, but they were actually working together in a way, you know?
Yeah, because that was one of the things we really wanted to focus on, was the cooperative aspect, which is why we had the alley-oop in the game. It's because we really wanted you to have to rely on that other person. So it wasn't just like we play Call of Duty with our friends, but really you're all just an army of one. Like technically you're playing together, but nobody's helping anyone. Like,
yeah, it's one of my biggest like gripes with co-op is like a lot of games have co-op and it feels either tacked on or it's just, you're just all shooting at the same thing. And it's like, that doesn't really feel that cooperative at the end of the day, you know? I always appreciate when there's a little more intention behind it. Mm-hmm. So that was one of our like major design philosophies, was like making the like two players feel really intentional.
But then also we level Lost Vikings, so we made the single player experience.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, because co-op back in the day is more like stay in your lane, take care of your enemies on your side of the screen, and don't mess up, or I will yell at you. And you're not going to steal my lives from me.
Yeah, exactly.
Better not, you fucker. Contra, you know how many relationships Contra has ruined? Just for stealing
Battletoads. Battletoads is my is what I'm going to.
You had to be a special kind of stupid to fall into that Battletoads trap.
Listen, there's something about it engages the ego, and like, I can be better than this game is. I have to be.
Yeah. It just taunts you so hard.
Right.
We were totally that kind of stupid. We played so much Battletoads. I think we beat that race course area like four times ever.
How amazing was that for the first time in co-op?
Oh, yeah.
When you it was like, an orgasm for like a teen, like yeah, or a preteen rather. It's like that's what sex felt like to me when I was.
Yeah, it was the most satisfying thing you could do at 10 years old. With your, you're like, this is maybe my highest accomplishment. It might all be downhill from here. I probably got existential after that.
That was like our first Dark Souls experience.
Yeah.
Some say it was the Dark Souls of side-scroller beat-em-ups. Some
yeah, yeah. In fact, I don't even call them. I don't call them souls-like. I call them toads-likes. That's what they're.
Yo, yeah.
That game gave me trust issues. From that point forward, I just thought all games were cheating, and then I wasn't necessarily bad at them. I was like, no, this game is purposefully being cheap and cheating me. And then there goes the ego as you
can't trust yourself. You can't trust your partner.
You don't want that kind of poison in your well, for sure.
And what was it with the philosophy? We're getting off track here, but what was with
we're totally on track.
Of saying, okay, mode A, mode B in these games where you don't know which one is the one where you're going to kick the shit out of your friend. Why can't they just say, like, cooperative and punch your friend mode?
But why is it an option to begin with?
Yes, that is a very, very smart question, Andy. Why is it an option?
Yeah, right,
but
so,
I digress.
I mean, River City Ransom is a really good example of that too. Like, the amount of times you throw a bad guy into your partner only to knock him over. Oh, come on.
Or a lead pipe, you know?
Why though? But why?
But it's so fun.
Which is funny because in our game, like originally we weren't going to let the players attack each other, but then we had some friends playing and they like just insisted on griefing each other. So just for fun, I made it so you could attack each other. And I was like, should we leave this in? And everyone's like, oh yeah, they're brothers. They can hit each other. That's how brothers play. Like, it just makes sense. So it doesn't help you at all. Yeah.
If they're killing each other, then what's a few slaps in the face going to do?
Yeah.
Not a big deal.
So you guys, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you guys are, for lack of a better term, you're novice game creators. And your story revolves around novice, really terrible wizards. What are we doing? Are we mirroring real life here? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely like a big tone of like art imitating life in the game. I mean, it's a game about brothers. You know, they're not particularly talented. They're just trying to figure it out. I think that's really like, you know, you write what you know. And like, that was a story I really identify with is like, I like the idea. Like there's so many narratives that are just like, you're the chosen one. You're a superhero. You can do all these amazing things. And it's like, I know that that's like the ideal experience and that's a super fun experience for games, but it's not really a story that I feel like it's that interesting for me to tell, for us to tell. And so like, we wanted to do something that was definitely more of like an underdog thing. Like what happens when, you know, like in the other guys, right? You watch the Rock and Samuel Jackson jump off the thing and they die 5 minutes of the movie. And then
spoiler.
What? Sorry. Oh yeah. Spoiler alert. You haven't seen
the first ago. The first 5 minutes.
Yeah. But like, that's like such an interesting moment to me is like, speaking from the place of like, you know, not having it all figured out and kind of like this like comedy of errors that kind of brings you through the story and being, you know, not the like, not even a hero to zero. Like they aren't even that much better off at the end of the game magically than they are when they start, right? Like that's their whole thing. And so like, I don't know. I just think there's something so endearing about being kind of the class clown or the fuck up, and probably because that's 100% who I am. So, you know, I just, it's all just an allegory for our childhood and just growing up together and stuff for sure.
And I really love the gore factor in this game. Like the first kill acted upon one sibling really hooks you in. It's like, okay, you just blew up in a very bloody fashion.
Yeah.
Let's fucking go.
Yeah. We played a lot of Mortal Kombat when we were kids.
Yeah, it shows.
We always gravitated towards like, like the gory stuff. I mean, I'm a huge horror nerd. So like, you know, special effects and all that stuff is like right up my alley. Like there's literally like parts of the game. Like I reference the head explosion scene from Scanners. I don't know if you guys remember that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a classic scene. It's an amazing VFX shot, practical effects shot. But like, I totally reference that in one of the animations of the game. He does telekinesis and his head explodes, you know? So like, we're real kind of like, something about just death animations were like so satisfying to us. So we really tried to like explore that as much as possible. It made for some really awkward conversations around the house. Like I'm walking with my girlfriend. I'll never forget this. I'm walking with my girlfriend. We're just on like a little hike. And I'm like, if you could die in any way that would be interesting, what would it be? It's just like unprompted, not like, hey, I'm thinking about the video game or anything. She's just like, what are you, should I be worried right now?
It's funny because I got lost in like a long Twitter thread last night talking about practical effects in the films like The Blob or The Thing. And I think that's because you guys, I assume like us, grew up in that movie era where they actually tried to make effects look very real, glossy, shiny CG effects.
Yeah, I mean, I still like have such a special place for any practical effects that any movies do, because now it's like not cost effective generally. And I see that worked in stop motion animation. I totally get what it's like to work in like a dying art form that's not cost effective, because like CG just crushes everything now practically. But there's just such a beauty to like the handmade like aspect of that. And even with pixel art, I felt like there was like kind of this like nuance to it that felt very special, because it isn't something that you need to do anymore in video games, right? So it's like an aesthetic, it's a choice that you're making, because like obviously computers can do so much more than what a pixel game necessitates, but like there's something so beautiful about like the intention that goes into that. So yeah, in a lot of ways, like doing pixel art was kind of our version of like getting into like practical effects, you know, for all intents and purposes.
Right, and we don't see pixels getting like decimated as much. Even back in the day when they were the main part of gaming, the main graphics, they didn't get completely like blown out of proportion or decapitated or burned alive, except for Mortal Kombat, of course, but like cutesy sprites like yours, like that dynamic, those two ideas together work so well.
Very happy tree friends.
Right.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I've always really liked that juxtaposition of like cutely morbid. Like, I don't know, it didn't seem like, especially with the narrative we were trying to tell, it seemed like it wouldn't have been a good fit for it to be any sort of realistic, you know, especially because you're dealing with like effectively what is conceptually suicide. Like, I don't need it to feel heavy, you know, it's not the point. And, you know, we definitely want to make sure we kept it charming and cute. And like we've seen like people that normally are not really responsive to that kind of violence laugh their asses off at it. And that was kind of what we were going for, you know?
Yeah. We'd be at an expo and a 7-year-old would come up and go to play the game. And you're just looking at the parents like, you're going to freak out when he blows up. Yeah. Like, what's happening? And they always were like, he plays Call of Duty. It's fine.
Yeah.
Grand Theft Auto.
I think the first moment for us when we played was having to decide who was going to get picked up and thrown on the set of spikes so you could use them as a platform. And then seeing that, just
it's an awkward, like, who's dying first? Because it's not going to be me. It's definitely going to be you.
Which one of us is worse at this? The answer is me.
Conversation in the game is that first moment of, like, or even just that realization of like, oh, I have to sacrifice in order to get over this. Like, I have to actively jump on the spikes as opposed to avoid them, the thing I've done in every other video game I've ever played, right?
Well, listen. We've all jumped off of Yoshi's back over a crevice had him die in the pit. So it's kind of there. It's built in to our psyche.
Yoshi was the first candidate for the yeet.
It's just we're now playing as Yoshi.
Yeah,
not one of you is.
Oh, poor Yoshi. Yeah,
so what kind of what kind of feedback have you guys been getting now that you're ostensibly at the finish line here?
So far, our feedback's been really good. And we were definitely nervous about it because we knew it was kind of a unique experience. We knew that, like, not everybody's a platformer person. But generally, like, people that have played it have been really, really positive on it. You know, the one thing we ran into a little bit was, like, we had some early bugs, you know. Unfortunately, it still is our first game, and there's just, we did beta, you know, we did actual like legit testing through our publisher and stuff, and there's just things that slip through the cracks. Our Nintendo build has a slight memory leak on it that, like, if you play it for over about 3 or 5 hours or something,
like 2 hours,
yeah, it'll start like not loading sprites. Which isn't that big of a deal. You can just relaunch it. Yeah. So keep an eye on yours there, Andy. If it's going on. Right.
Yeah. Luckily, yeah. The issue with the Switch only pops up when you first load a level, and it's after it saves your progress. So you'll never lose anything, luckily. So it doesn't like negatively affect your progress at all. So it could be worse, but we actually have a patch working right now for it. We're just waiting for approval to get it posted.
Also, yeah. As a guy that loves puns, seeing the stage names was highly appreciated.
That was so fun.
Lava's a battlefield. I like these guys.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you enjoyed that. That's definitely another one of those things that we're like, puns aren't for
us. I was like, oh, these are my kind of people.
Yeah, yeah. That was one of our really like another part of our like intention in making the game was like we knew the type of people we wanted to make the game for, and we knew it wasn't going to be your average Fortnite kid, but like for the folks that like appreciate this kind of stuff, we really think it's like right over the plate, you know what I mean? And
it's so Bubsy.
Bubsy. Yeah, just like dorky and fun and lighthearted, and also like we're the type of people that we don't really need a lot of narrative in our games. Mm-hmm. You know, we just want to like get to the meat and potatoes of it. So really narrative light, and like if it's going to be a narrative, it's going to be funny, and we're going to try to make it humorous and entertaining. Mm-hmm. You know, those were all like really really specific intentional things we set out to do, and I think largely based on the feedback we've got, it was successful in doing all those things. So that felt really validating for us.
Yeah, it's tough because you work on it for so long and you're staring at your screen forever, and eventually you just get to this point where no matter how good your game is, you're like, it's garbage. All I can see is the flaw. I just made a giant pile of garbage and we're going to show it to the world. They're going to think it's garbage.
Who would like this?
Yeah, and then the good review came in, you're like, oh, thank God people don't hate it. Like, you get so, your view of it gets so distorted.
Yeah, for sure.
There's another upside to Expos. Expos really help rejuvenate your love for the project because you see people respond to it and enjoy it. And it reminds you that, like, oh, yeah, not everyone views the game the way that you do when you spend hundreds of hours staring at it.
Oh, yeah. We're so carsick when it comes to, like, playing the game and stuff because we've just spent so much time, especially this last few weeks, you know, trying to go through all the last-minute stuff. Like, we've just looked at it so much. We're like, it's nice to finally just take a little step away and know that it, like, is received, you know.
Mm. Andy, any final questions while we wrap up this part?
Well, what's next for you guys? I mean, the game is out there. People are loving it. You mentioned some DLC, possibly things that were left on the cutting room floor. The killed darlings, as it were.
Well, we know that the first thing that they're going to do is throw some flex tape on that memory leak. Right. After that.
That just brought those on their way.
Yeah, that is intel. Yeah.
I'm thinking more bigger picture stuff for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, once everybody stops complaining about bugs, then we'll move on to the next thing. But
got it.
And ultimately, we definitely want to keep trying to do this. You know, one thing we didn't really get into too much as far as like our trajectory into this was, you know, ultimately we were completely self-funded for our part of like the development of the game. So we've been living off of savings for the last couple years. And the only reason that was possible was because we actually lost our mom to brain cancer a couple years ago.
Sorry.
And thank you. But like, it was really kind of a beautiful gift for us because her like dying wish was for us to sit down and finish this thing that she knew we were so passionate about.
Oh, wow.
And she was our biggest fan. And so for us, this has been like a tremendously personal achievement because of that as well. But we're also basically at the end of that runway, you know, like we've done what we came to do, but like, we're hoping that we can just kind of, you know, generate enough interest and keep the train rolling so that we can work on another thing, because we definitely feel like in a lot of ways we proved ourselves here, and we really enjoyed what we came up with and what we were able to do. But we, you know, definitely, you know, it's our first waffle. You know, nobody makes their first waffle off the waffle machine. It's like, this is right. Perfect. You know, you get the batter, you know, where you want it to be, the pan's not heated up enough or whatever, and then you figure out how to adjust. And so we definitely want to try to make another waffle for sure.
Our first waffle's still pretty good.
It's mighty tasty. Mighty tasty.
Yeah, thank you.
Like you said, we are out of money. So if you don't buy the game, we have to go back to getting
no more waffles.
So that's about as real talk as we can get about that, but not to bring it like too low, but like that's really like where we're at.
I appreciate it for sure. All right, folks, it is time to get into our rapid fire segment, but before we do that, did you know, listeners and viewers, that we do other shows on this very same channel? You don't even have to go anywhere else. Andy, we do the Dual Screens Games Cast. What is that, Andy?
We do so many things. That is a weekly show we do live on Twitch, which is twitch.com/dualscreensstreams every Monday night.
Twitch.tv, but that's all right.
Sure, that's a thing that you have to put in there.
Yep,
yeah, that. It's not a and that's every Monday night, 9 p.m. And we talk about game stuff, you know, things in the news.
That's what we do.
And it's highly exciting. Indeed. Things get also a little bit heated, but it's all part of the fun.
Sometimes we yell at each other. It's fine.
We do.
Sometimes we yell
at
companies.
Oh, yeah, we yell at the headlines. Developers. Yeah.
People who write terrible headlines.
Or our folks in the chat also. That happens. That stuff.
And of course, we have our seasonal shows, which you could also just scroll through and find those. We're in the middle of season one of Dual Screens Versus, which is a show designed for Andy and I to yell at each other. So, and that's moderated by guest moderators. And also, if you want to support us on Patreon, please do so at patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producers, FNH Paul and Colton. The Apprentice Nestler. We cannot continue to grow without all of your support. So please, if you like what you hear and you want to continue supporting us, you could do so for as little as $1, and it would help us out tremendously. All right. Now it's time for everybody's favorite segment. It's time for Rapid Fire. This is where we, Andy and Steve, ask you guys, Josh and Nate, some weird-ass questions, and we expect weird answers. Andy, start us off.
This is for both of you, and you can answer separately, of course. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Yes.
Emphatic yes.
Yep.
Big fan. Wow.
I know.
Okay.
We're horrible, horrible people.
If
Okay, well, at least you acknowledge it. That's fine.
Okay. Yeah. If somebody asks you for the screwdriver, are you getting the Phillips head or the flathead?
I've got Phillips head. I don't know why.
Phillips, yeah. Phillips is it. Yeah.
Understood.
Would you rather eat a sandwich made from four ingredients in your fridge, chosen at random, or eat a sandwich made by your brother by four ingredients in your fridge right now? How deep is that sibling rivalry?
Yeah. I mean,
how much do you want to fuck with one another?
We trust each other.
I totally trust Nate, but I also have a fridge full of like legit ass condiments. So like, I don't really think you could go super wrong if you just randomly reached in there. But I think Nate would probably make a better sandwich for me.
I'd probably let him make my sandwich too.
Yeah.
He knows what I like. Yeah.
Interesting.
Look at that.
Interesting.
Okay.
All right. Is cereal a soup?
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a soup.
Yeah, I think it is.
I just heard the other day.
You eat it with a spoon. Yeah,
I just heard the other day a vanilla latte with soy milk is a three bean soup, but nobody wants to talk about that.
That's great. I love that.
It's true. Wow.
Well, let's see. What do you think people notice most about you? What do you think? Most about you.
We call ourselves Long Neck Games because we are both very tall guys. We really lean into it. I'm 6'8", if that gives you any idea.
Holy hell.
Yeah, see? Yeah. That's how tall we are.
I'm only 6'3", but even people most
tall. Oh, only 6'3".
Only 6'3", yeah. Yes, only 6'3". Us down here at 5'7",
right.
Say hello.
Us in the Dwarven Kingdom running around.
Also, I realized
stubby legs.
Sorry about that, everybody. I'm working on it every day, you guys.
Okay. Offset thumbsticks, as in 360 controller, or your symmetrical thumbsticks, like your PlayStation controller?
You know, I always was more favored to the 360 controller, but I think it was because we have big hands more than anything. I didn't even think about the offset of the thumbsticks. I don't know. That's a tough one.
See, I just love symmetry in general, so I'd probably go symmetry.
Yeah, it's more aesthetically pleasing for sure. Yeah, let's go with that.
Would you rather have a sumo wrestler on top of you or you on top of him?
I'm basically like a skeleton with like shrink wrap one. I don't think I would do very well with a sumo wrestler on top of me.
Yeah,
but you know, I'm not here to kink shame, so if that's your jam, we're part of you.
Yeah.
Would you rather walk around for an entire day with soggy wet socks or soggy wet underwear?
Oh, socks. God, that's rough.
Socks for sure.
Yeah, it's got to be socks. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those are both awful. Yeah, both that's a terrible there. Choice clothes for yeah. sure.
It's a good follow-up. Is it okay to sleep with socks on?
I can't.
I think it's okay. Yeah. Hmm. Your feet get cold, I'm into it.
Sure. Hmm. Sure.
If your Nintendo game doesn't work, what do you do?
You blow on it. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Ooh, flight.
I think probably flight. Yeah.
Invisibility
just makes you into an instant perv, pretty much, like by default, right? Like it's so hard to be like, oh, you're invisible. Oh, okay, so you don't get to be anywhere near us anymore. Like,
yeah,
you are a sex offender just waiting to happen. And I don't even think that's like intentional, but it's just how it plays out.
Yeah, that's where you're gonna fall. You're gonna fall into it's like a plinko chair. You're just gonna kind of land.
You would think being 6'8", you want to not be in the crowd too much to stick out like a sore thumb.
Sure.
Just go invisible every now and then.
Invisibility with a gift like invisibility, you either live, you die a hero, or live long enough to be the villain. Like I just, you got a long enough timeline, you abuse that power in some way.
Yeah. Next thing you know, all your attractive friends, when they're changing, they're throwing flour around their room just in case.
Yeah.
Would you rather have the power to see in the dark or the power to create light anywhere?
Oh.
Mm. Ooh, interesting.
I mean, this probably piggybacks on the whole like perv aspect, but I think maybe I'd like to see in the dark more than make light. Cause now you're like maybe being the annoying guy in the movie theater when you're just trying to look for your like keys or something that fell down or something, right? Like,
you know, I would like to be able to see in the dark because my dog is black and she likes to lay in different areas of the room. And I feel so bad how many times I've kicked her in her poor little face trying to get back to bed after going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
So for her sake, I would take the night vision.
Night vision has its perks for sure. Yeah. Mm.
I just got a really good question. Go ahead, Andy.
All right. Would you rather have skin that changes color based on your emotions or tattoos that appear all over your body depicting what you did yesterday?
Oh, interesting. I like that
question. I mean, just in case it would be painful, I would go with the skin tinting for sure.
Yeah, once that masturbation tattoo shows up, it's like awkward.
It's like it's covered in a bunch of dicks.
As you can see, I was in prison yesterday. There are the bars. There's all the crimes I did. They're all across my chest.
Yeah, right? Here's me picking up my dog's poop. I mean, it happened, but I didn't need it to show up right on my cheek, you know, in the middle of a job interview.
All right. You have to pick one of these two traits. Would you rather show affection by licking somebody's face like a dog or recognize somebody by sniffing their ass?
And we don't get any follow-up questions on this, I assume.
Listen, if you need clarification,
it depends on the answer.
Yeah, I get. Well, I'm wondering if this is a world where sniffing people's butts would be socially acceptable then, or is it like
this is
like,
you? This is you and you alone.
See, that just sounds easy. No, we're living in this world
this
we live in right
you'd
now.
You'd have to do things from now on.
Yeah.
In that context, I think people would forgive me a lot more for licking faces than they would for sniffing butts.
Same. Maybe a couple face lickers. Yeah.
I feel like there would probably be an easier conversation to say, look, I know we've met before, but I have this thing where I'm not going to know for sure unless I sniff your butt. Then there would be, if you go, listen, I have this thing, I really, really like you. But I the only way I could show this, it's compulsory at this point. I have to lick your mouth. Can I just please lick your mouth? I feel like the sniffing.
That seems more invasive.
I feel like the licking, it could be assault where the sniffing would just be weird.
But the licking is an intimate thing that you're typically doing with somebody that you're close to, whereas the butt sniffing is literally anybody you've ever met before, right? Mm. So like I'm thinking I'm hedging the numbers on that. Like like I'll probably find more people that would tolerate me licking their face than the impact of having to sniff everybody's butt every time I see them. Like when we run into you guys at the next PAX, it would be a lot more awkward, I think, to have that conversation with you, right?
Oh, hey, man. Oh, that's right. You don't remember. Here, get in there.
Yeah.
Get in there.
Facial blindness already seems like a pretty difficult thing to deal with, but could you imagine putting that layer on it?
Oh, God. Disgusting. All right, Andy, go ahead.
What would be on the gag reel of your life?
Oh, gosh, the gag reel. I don't know. I mean, we did so much dumb stuff as teenagers that probably should have gotten us like killed or in trouble that we like somehow survived. But it all just feels like one big dumb blur. So it's hard to be like, oh, that's the thing.
Yeah. I also did a lot of parkour for a while. So there'd probably be a lot of bloopers from me failing at parkour, learning it along the way.
Yikes.
Oh, I got the one. I dislocated the hell out of my left arm. So I was rollerblading, like extreme rollerblading. We like going on rails and stuff, but I was waiting for everybody else to put their skates on. And we were at a playground and I stood at the top of the slide. As soon as my skates touched the slide, it was like the slickest thing ever to touch the other slickest thing in the world. And I just flipped off the slide, landed, dislocated my arm super duper bad.
That was so gross.
Within like 10 seconds of everybody getting to the spot we were going to skate at. And I was just like, you got to go. And I'm just holding my arm and it's like dangling. I'm just like,
no, we don't like you. All
you, so bad.
You look like a fucking Silent Hill villain. It's like,
yeah. I look like a busted ass scarecrow for sure.
Well, then we went to the doctor and he lied to him about it. Like, what happened to your arm? He goes, I fell off a swing.
Yeah. Did I lie to him? I don't remember that. That probably would be something.
Uh-huh, a swing, indeed.
Yeah, so there's my embarrassing. That's got to be on the reel for sure. Yeah.
What is the stupidest thing you've purchased off of television?
Oh, good question. Television. I'm gonna maybe
or Facebook ad.
Yeah, I bought a shirt that just says "Spicy Heck Boy" on it with a big goat with a pentagram on it. It's not really stupid. I love it a lot, but it is kind of a dumb thing when you really think about it.
I don't know if I bought anything super dumb. I'm super frugal with my money. Yeah. So
And this is like the yin and yang of us is like, he's super frugal with his money. My motto is literally, I bought stupider shit for more. Like, that's how I justify spending.
Well, that's how you bring balance. If he's not going to spend any money, then it falls on you.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh,
Yeah, my stupid purchases are like, I'm going to do this project, and then I buy all the supplies, and then I try making it. And I'm like, well, I can't make this thing, so I guess I'll just throw all the supplies away.
Put this in a closet somewhere and look at it 3 years from now. I purchased one of those thin wallets, you know, like where they're like, don't sit on all your crap. Put it in this really thin wallet. And you're like, yeah,
right,
cool. But you can only fit like four things from your wallet in this literally. So you wind up just throwing away your
wallet. Like your ID and one credit card, and that's it.
Yeah. That might have been the stupidest thing. I was like, oh, yeah, that's how they make it so thin. You put nothing.
But it has a built-in tile. I can track it if I lose it.
Yeah, sure. That's what it was.
I mean, the clothes from middle school would probably fit in that category if I bought them from TV. But Oof, the trends back then.
JNCO jeans, baby.
Oh, yeah. All about them JNCOs.
Aren't they making a comeback with JNCOs?
They're trying. They're banking on the mental instability of our youth in this current climate to bring that back. Because that was...
Yeah, that's definitely an uphill battle. Yeah. Technology cyclical. Fashion cyclical. That's what it is. Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. Our parents let it happen.
JNCO mask?
No.
JNCO's making a mask and it just hangs all the way down to your feet?
Wallet chains? Remember wallet chains? How many dog chains do you have on your wallet? Seven.
And tape.
I have seven chains. Andy?
What are your two favorite co-op games of all time?
Co-op games. I mean, Bubble Bobble was like our first
Bubble Bobble has a special place in our heart. We actually have a Bubble Bobble print in the office at our other office.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. Bubble Bobble is definitely up there. This honestly, like probably the other like cooperative thing we play so much Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah.
We really like the team fight aspect of that game. And it's like a more accessible MOBA for us. That's probably my other favorite like cooperative thing that we play.
Yeah,
that frequency.
That's got to be. I mean, considering how much we play it, and then also I have a special place in my heart for Overcooked because it's the only game I've convinced my wife to play with me.
Yeah,
so
I tried that once.
I'll throw one more in there as like a little variable. Just River City Ransom is like one of my favorite games.
Oh yeah, that was another huge one for us.
All right, so follow up. There's a tent. It's got River City Ransom, and it's got Bull Bobble in it, and the tent's on fire. You only save one.
Oh shit!
And the other one is gone forever. You can never play it again. Which one do you pull out of the tent?
It's got to be River City Ransom.
It did. It's true. It's tough, though. That's a real selfish choice.
Yeah, that's a tough one. All right. Talk about kill your darlings. Yeah.
This is going to be my final question, and then Andy will have the final question.
Yes.
What one IP would you like to make a game for?
Dark Souls?
Wow. No, I would never. I don't think I could ever touch Dark Souls. I think it would be.
You went right for it.
What's that?
You went right for it, Dark Souls.
Yeah,
he knows how much I like Dark Souls. I have I don't know if you guys can see this. Maybe I'll be able to show it to you here. But I have a bonfire tattoo right here.
Hell yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so neat.
I also have a Darkest Dungeon torch right on the
Holy
side.
Shit.
Yeah. They kind of complement each other.
Oh my God.
So I didn't catch your actual answer, though. What did you say?
Yeah, so I don't think Dark Souls would be the one I touch. I actually think maybe Battletoads would be a really fun one to revisit.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. I can see that being cool.
Very nice.
For me, fun IP. Maybe Mega Man. I'm just such a sucker for the whole Mega Man setup. Like, it's just so fun to me. Like, obviously, our game has like Mega Man-esque mechanics to it because I'm so inspired by Mega Man. So that might be the one for me.
Yeah. All right, Andy. Take us home with what is our ceremonial final question.
Just going to say, I feel bad asking this final question because it's always the hardest question on the show.
It is.
And I love you both so much.
We do.
And then Mega Man just added so much more affection because that's like my all-time favorite game franchise.
Nice.
So, Sophie's Choice, Killing Darlings. Here we go. Final question. Andy or Steven?
Oh, gosh. You guys are mean. He also kind of set us up a little bit against you here, Steve, because he, like did all that Mega Man love and stuff.
Uh-huh,
he's really
this is how we do it, though.
We take turns who gets to ask
this
question.
Yeah, we take turns, and we have a little...
And we really,
it's like you make a little bit of a little case for yourself sometimes.
That shit as much as
you can. Yeah, there's always a thing that's a dual interview, so we can really cheat and not have to kill any darlings. I pick Andy.
I pick Steve.
There you go.
There you go. Perfect. And that, folks, brings
us... Between the two of us, love you both equally.
Yeah.
Yes, but with our powers combined, we make one tolerable human.
Barely.
Barely is correct. That is going to bring us to the end of the show. Thank you so much, listeners, for checking us out. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at NDS Podcast. I am at Batchild27. Andy is at Pants Guy. And our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/DS Podcasts. Gentlemen, where can everybody find everything you do and you guys and all that fun stuff?
Yeah, so we're just Res Please Game on pretty much everything. So Twitter, Instagram.
RespleaseGame.com.
RespleaseGame.com. The game's on Steam, Switch, Xbox One right now. So check it out. It's $15 US. Yeah.
Awesome.
I think that's about it. Yeah.
Awesome.
We're on Humble Bundle.
Humble Bundle, yes.
Oh, wow.
Get in there.
Alrighty.
That'd be good. We want to do a special thanks, give a special thanks to Bradley Parsons at Train Sound Studio, of course, for our theme song, Retro Chatter. Thank you, Andrew Douglas, for our cartoon art that we use in a lot of our little placards. And thank you, Matt Murray, for our overlay and our logo. Again, if you want to support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/NDS Podcast. And if you want to buy our merchandise, it's dualscreens.com/store. And of course, visit dualscreens.com for our reviews, previews, other articles. We're doing our dual screen selects, which is where Andy and I, our editor-in-chief Thorne Stone, and our contributors to the website throughout the years are all picking our favorites at what we're calling the dual screen selects of the current generation as we wrap this current generation and get into next gen hardware at the end of the year. So we're picking our favorites and the very best of the generation. So head over to dualscreens.com. That's DUELScreens.com. And check that out. Andy, is there anything you want to tell the kids before we go?
I mean, I could announce next week's guest.
Oh, my.
I think it's locked in.
Okay.
Don't quote me on this, but I think we're having Tribute Games, the creator of Panzer Paladin, coming on.
Yes.
Next week. I think that's the one.
Awesome.
Yes.
Very excited about that. That's a great game.
Very exciting.
You actually reviewed that game on dualscreens.com.
Yes. And they gave it a highly recommend.
Highly recommended.
Plus, I drew a lot of pixel dick, so that helps.
You did. You can make your own pixel weapons, and Andy went with the what was it, the tri-dick of the
So it was a staff with a bunch of dildos on it.
Right, yep.
And then I did a spear with just a cock and balls.
Just the one
tip.
With the balls. Yeah, the balls are the
that,
one
that
makes
that was the clear evolution of my
That's
pixel
the one that makes
skills.
It difficult to get out of
the
enemy.
The shading on that is just
It's superb.
Perfection.
It's superb.
So if you want an artist for your team down the line.
Yeah, it sounds like we've got our next
look no further.
This is why we can't have nice things, gentlemen. This is why Nintendo doesn't let us play games online and makes everything very difficult. Anyway, that is going to do it for us. Thank you so much, listeners. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Josh and Nate, for joining us. And as always, please be excellent to each other.